How did you get your start in the music business?
How did I get my start? Jeez Louise. I don't know whether you mean business or just musically. Musically, I started at 8 years old in a choir, which was really funny because it wasn't a proper choir. It was just like a primary school, terrible singing children, you know what I mean? Like, and I was one of the worst singers ever. The only reason why I got in was because I cried. So they were like, oh, okay, we'll let you in. I was like, yeah. And then,
Nice.
yeah, that was how I got started. But in the industry properly, I met a guy over here called Kwame Quaton. He basically found like a British artist called Shola Ama. I don't know if you heard of her in the States, but over here she did pretty well. And yeah, and basically he like recognized that I had like a songwriting talent. I had no idea. I was like, oh, well, me? Okay. And he was like, yeah, sure. And then, he basically developed me for a couple of years. And then that was basically my first foot in the door of the industry.
Basically. Nice. Now, which do you find harder? I mean, do you find the making the music side of it harder, like, i.e. the singing and the recording process, or do you find the songwriting part harder?
I don't find any of them hard.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, I find them both like really easy.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I mean, because me personally, I'm a guitar player, so I can play the guitar all day long. But if you ask me to write something, I really, really have to buckle down at it.
Yeah, no, do you know what it is? I think the only reason why they're both slightly easy is because when I was younger, I used to improvise over, so like there used to be like a radio station, like a pirate one, and it was like playing American R&B music, actually, which is like the first time I'd ever discovered it. And I just used to literally like freestyle, like improvise over all of the songs. So I used to make up my own melodies, my own lyrics, and just like improvise over and over again. And of course, like years of doing that, you end up, when you have to buckle down, it actually ends up being quite easy because it was there all along, if that makes any sense.
Now, how do you get from being in a choir at 8 years old to playing the O2 Arena in London? How does that happen?
Well, actually, it was I was going to an open mic called All Sorts in Shoreditch, and which is in East London, by the way, just in case American people don't know what I'm all about. But yeah, and literally, the organizer there, he really, really just believed in me, and he still does. He basically was like, you know what? I've got this opportunity. I want to get you on it. Let's do it. And it was literally as simple as that, just because I kept turning up and I had someone who really, really believed in me and just wanted me to sort of show my talent off to London, basically.
Nice, nice. Now, we reviewed your song earlier this week, This Is What You Get. What's the backstory on the lyrics in there? Because it's kind of cathartic in a way.
Basically, it's just basically that there was a point in my life where which wasn't that long ago, like about a couple of years ago, my confidence just completely went, you know, being in a relationship sometimes has its hardships, and I had every, like, my confidence, everything sort of just disappeared, and then I ended up having like depression and anxiety and blah blah blah. And then one day, I don't know, something just happened and I realized, actually, none of this is worth it. And so I just got up and then I started to call myself, inside though, not publicly, but I started to call myself a queen because I forgot what I really was. I forgot I was a gem. And I used to just think I was like a piece of shit on the floor. Sorry for swearing. And, you know, and so I would allow everyone to walk all over me. The first verse where it's like, you know, there is a queen who lives in this castle, blah, blah, blah. Basically someone who's trapped in, like, you know, with all these insecurities and whatnot. Yeah, basically. So, and then obviously the chorus is sort of to be a little bit empowering and just saying, you know, this is what you get. Like, see you later. I don't need any of this bull crap anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And exactly. And it's amazing how, and I've been guilty of this myself. It's amazing how we get caught in a rut where we start to define ourselves based on what other people see us as.
Big time.
And I'm just as guilty of that myself. I mean, I think that's part of being human, don't you think, in a way?
Yeah, no, definitely. I just, you know what, I'm a very, very naive person. I believe every single human being, like even animals, you know, everything. I believe everything has the right to be here, and I believe everything is good and everything is nice. But then obviously there are some people out there who have lost that spirit in a sense. So they try and sort of whack yours out of you, if that makes any sense, you know. So
totally.
Yeah, so I feel like that song was definitely necessary.
Now you've overcome a lot to get where you're at now. One thing I was intrigued with in your bio was suffering from anxiety and having a speech impediment. How do you get out of that rut? Because minus the speech impediment, I've had to get out of that as well. And it's a long, hard road.
It really, really is. To be honest with you, I don't actually know how I got out of it, because I mean, I don't know if you were the same, but as a child, I don't recall having any of the deep thoughts that I do now as a young adult. And so I think one day I literally, I don't know, something just happened and you just could not get me to stop talking. I just was like, blah, 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 blah. And everyone was like, shut up. But I don't know, I honestly can't say how I got out of it. I think just something just clicked. Like I said, you know, like realizing that I had the right, because I always wanted to be invisible, if that makes any sense. I don't know. I felt like I was always in the way, blah, blah, blah. And I don't really know where that came from. But I don't know. I think one day when I was actually seen, like when I'd made like my first proper friends, I just like... It, everything just sort of came out. I was able to then flourish and talk and be normal.
Nice. And I think with all of us, we just reach that point where we have to change.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what happened to you as well, because after that, it seems like that's where your building process was. Not necessarily a healing process, but I like to look at things like that as a building process, because you're building from scratch.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it sounds like your music reflects that, because you also do your own mixing and mastering.
Well, no. Oh, no, no, no. Not mixing and mastering. Sorry, I think when they said mastering... they meant like, because I produce my own songs. I'm not very good at the mixing and mastering, so I will always get a professional to do that. But I just produce it and arrange it and do the musical bit, and then give it to someone else to make it sound amazing.
Gotcha. Well, the music, the lyrics, and the singing and the writing is the bulk of it. The post production aspect is the finishing touch, like the icing on the cake, so to say, if you think about it. I mean, but how is your creative process like? I mean, you know, when you begin a new song, like this is what you get. How do you create it and then get the emotion and the power behind it, you know, to come out through the speakers, so to say?
Do you know what I think? I mean, this is just one perspective, but I think it's having a lot of sensitivity, like having a lot of emotion that you just can't contain, that you just really, really need to get out. I mean, with what you get, what I do is I basically like set myself a goal to write X amount of songs a week. So I think this is what you get. I'd written about 5 songs in the week, and they were all terrible, because it happens.
I know all about all that.
Literally, I think, you know, I'll write about 20 songs in a month, and I think one of them will be okay. Not even great, you know. And this is what you get, was out of frustration, actually, because I was like, oh my God, all these songs I've done all week are absolutely awful. So then I decided to watch this film called The Holiday, and there's a song at the end which I was like sort of freestyling over, and I thought, this is quite cool. So then I thought, okay, let's just add some really simple chords to it. And so I started to do that, and that's literally how it came together. And then I just started to, there is a queen, you know, there is a queen, started like just coming out. And I was like, oh, okay, here we go. We've got a concept. The concept is empowerment, if you like, or whatever, you know.
Exactly. And there's proof right there that you obviously don't auto-tune, because you were dead on when you did that.
Yeah.
So.
No, God, I don't know what auto-tune.
Your vocals are pristine, in my opinion.
Oh, so thank you.
That's why I was shocked to read that you had a speech impediment at one time.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the speech impediment helped. You don't know.
It's possible. It's possible. It can help with your cadence. I remember seeing an interview with James Earl Jones. I don't know if you know who he is, but he was the voice of Darth Vader. And yeah. And he said, apparently Darth Vader's voice required a dyslexic boy from Mississippi with a speech impediment. And that's how his voice evolved.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that story.
He said it helped with his cadence, and that kind of made his voice unique, because he gets hired for a lot of voiceover work as well. Like, well, he's the voice of CNN.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You see, everything happens for a reason, I reckon.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, my question would be this then. How do you take an impediment or what most people would consider a drawback, and how do you make that work for you?
To be honest, I just think you've got to want it enough. That's the only thing that ever worked for me. I mean, sometimes I still have, you know, my stutter or whatever, out of nerves. But I don't know. I just think if you, it's you know what I mean. It's something in the heart. You know, when you can't get enough of something, it's almost like an obsession. And that's the only way I think you can ever make a drawback, like a setback, a diamond, if you like. Like, you know, do you know what I mean? Like turning it into something great. I don't know if that answered your question.
It does, because what I see a lot of in the music industry is the ones that make it, like yourself. I would consider you on the road, on the fast track to making it, you know, to get totally getting where you want to be. And the reason I say that is because the ones that are where you're at now, like the one, you know, i.e. the ones that we interview and the ones that we showcase and everything, they all have one thing in common. They don't rely on outside sources other than ones they employ. You know, yeah. so they don't walk around cashing in favors or asking people or hitting up radio stations and asking them for help. You know, they get their feet on the street, so to say, and they hoof it, you know.
It definitely took a while, because I'm guilty of being one of those people who is like emailing people and blah blah blah, saying, oh, you know, could you give this a listen, give me some feedback. I think you've got to go through it. I mean, maybe not everyone has to, but I think I definitely had to go through it to realize, do you know what, fuck it, I'm gonna do it myself.
Well, you have to do that, but what I would say is a fundamental difference is, I would think, like, what I'm thinking is there's a difference with that. Like, what you're talking about is the correct way to do it, but then I'm talking about, I see a lot of people that will do that and expect an email back, and then think, well, F it, you know, basically, for lack of a better term, you know. Whereas like people like yourself and, you know, others that I've interviewed will not let that be a discouragement and then keep on going, because, you know, you have to market yourself as a brand, and to market yourself as a brand, you have to be behind your brand 1,000%.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So how do you take, because, you know, let it be known out there to the people that are listening, for every one entity or publisher or record label or radio station, whatever, that answers back, there will be 10 million that won't even respond. That's just a simple fact.
Yeah, exactly. But the way I don't know. I mean, this is one way to look at it. The way that I look at it in my head is like, do you know what? One day, because I mean, all this desire, the drive, the ambition, the endurance, all of this is, I mean, it's going to result into something and it'll be something great. And all those people that don't reply will be the first ones who will be hitting your phone up, you know? So that's what I think anyway. Maybe not, but who knows?
So where do we see Lina in the, you know, in the future? I mean, do we see full-fledged album tour, things like that?
I'm going to correct. My name's Lena, by the way. I know it's spelt Lina, but it's Lena.
I'm sorry. I am so sorry.
It's okay. it's quite normal, to be honest.
I will notate that in the article. I will put that front and center in the article, and I will eat crow in front of everybody and correct myself.
Just think of it as if you're leaning and then the noise that comes when you're relaxing. Ah, Lena, you know, that's the best way to think about it, I think. But I think the next step for me is I just want to keep getting singles out because I'm really, really enjoying songwriting and obviously the recording, the producing, I'm really, really enjoying it. And I think the best thing for me right now is just to see how the public reacts to everything. I mean, you know, it's like throwing spaghetti on a wall and seeing what sticks, seeing what everyone likes. And at the end of the day, I write it for myself, but I also write it so that I can bring joy and happiness because there's such a lack of it in the world that it'd just be nice just to light somebody's heart up, you know?
Absolutely.
Basically that's the plan.
Now, do you think the age of the album is dead? Because I hear a lot of artists from, you know, from your generation, i.e. the new generation, you know, they're going the single route. They don't do, you know, at the most you'll see an EP now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know because I can't speak for everyone. I do know some people my age that still buy albums. I know that you guys interviewed Ronak at some point. I don't know if you remember. Yes, he's a really, really good friend of mine. It's really funny because he loves albums. But I mean, I think when I was a child, my mum always, always, always bought us albums, you know. And every time I listened to them, I always found there was only like two or three songs on there that I really, really liked. And it really annoyed me because at the time we used to have Walkmans. I don't know if you remember the CD players. And you really like skip past them. Before that it was the cassette player and I had to like you had to unwind the tape and then like turn it round and blah 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 just so you can get to the good songs. But I actually think, to be honest, I think it actually works if you're that kind of person, if you're the kind of person that just wants to listen to your favorites and doesn't really want to
I had the yellow cassette Sony Walkman, the waterproof one, if that tells you how old I am. So the one that you didn't have to take the cassette out to flip sides because it would just reverse it and then play the second side.
No, my parents weren't rich enough.
So the headphones were not waterproof. Just the box, because I tried to listen to it in the pool once and just to hear what it sounded like, and I had to get new headphones. Exactly. But you know what's funny? I think I've always thought of like albums like that too. I could probably only name two or three albums from my childhood that where it was good from, like I could listen to it from start to finish. It's like it's like there were two types of albums for me. The ones that kicked ass right out of the gate and then steadily got crappier as the album progressed. And then there's ones where it's spotty, like, okay, like good song, crap song, filler, good song, like that.
Too many fillers have.
Yeah. It's almost like the label told them, no, it's gotta be 60 minutes. You know, like exactly. That, you know, exactly. And they were at 58, 20. So that's why you see that, you know, 2 minute song in the middle of it there. you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're just like, okay, this somebody just slipped this one in for a laugh, you know, like, because a lot of them are like that. The only album I have to say is Katy Perry, when she released her latest one, which had like TGIF, it had all the number ones. All of the songs on there are hits, and to me, that's a good album. It's like it's songs that you would like to listen to. Not songs that you're just like, okay, let's just put that in just to, you know, make up for that extra 3 minutes, 25 seconds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a band that I think is famous for filler, and I won't mention their name, but they have the letter U and the number 2 in it. I like you too as well, but you ever notice when you get to track 5 or 6, it's like, okay, you guys are just fucking around, man. You guys are just playing with stuff now. You guys are just like, oh, look at this keyboard. You know?
Well, I think everyone hated them more when they like took over our iTunes for a while.
Yeah. Which I don't understand that, because that's like free music. It's like, I'll go ahead and listen to it. I don't care.
Yeah. No, I do get it. But I think if you genuinely have a lot of music and you think, you know what, I really don't want this on there, and you can delete it, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like they're force feeding it to you, like they force you to have it and stuff. Well, what do you think about how online music distribution is changing? Because that's where the bulk of your music will be sold, because you're a new artist and that's the way things are. I mean, the record stores are dying. So, you know, so like, as far as what you like is concerned, what do you like better? Do you like having that CD or vinyl, or do you like going to Spotify or iTunes and then just downloading it? It's on your phone.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I actually like it all. I feel like we're a very lucky generation, born in the 90s, so we got the best of everything. We got a taste of cassette, we got a taste of CD, my mom gave me some vinyls, you know, and now I've got my iPhone. To be honest with you, I don't have a problem with it. I think that this is just the time and that we should just go with it, really.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know? Yeah,
exactly. But it's nice to have the choices, I think, too. Like, if you want if you want that record, or if you want that CD.
Yeah, I mean, no, definitely. But at the same time, you know, the same thing could have been said when CDs were taking over cassettes or vinyls. Do you see what I mean? Like, people would have been, oh, no, you know. It's kind of the same thing. I think that us as the human race, we love to make issues out of things that really don't need to be made issues out of, because this is just a new way for people to listen to music. And I think it's great, because it means that more people can listen to us now. So,
Precisely. And that's what it comes down to. If you notice, mostly the only ones bitching and moaning are the labels.
Exactly. The people that were trying to control the music, trying to control it, now they have no way of containing us. They have no way of containing our voices, which is amazing. So, and that's all thanks to the people that have created like iTunes and created Spotify and everything else, because now everyone has the right to say something in musical. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. I mean, this goes way before the internet. I'm a child of the 80s and 90s. You know, that's when I was a kid. And before the internet, you could burn CDs. And before that, they had dual cassette players.
Yeah.
So,
I heard about them.
Oh, wow. Ouch. No, but you could copy music in the same quality long before computers.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, nothing's really changed. It's just new technology. That's all it is. And the fact, obviously, that it actually really supports artists like us. Because now, Jack, people like you, like Jamazine, you know, now you have, you know, you have a very abundant amount of music to put on your stuff. You know, you've got a lot of stuff you can listen to, you can choose what you like, what you don't like. Do you know what I mean? And back then it would have been a little bit more limited, because you would have needed to have people sending CDs to you and like recommending and blah blah blah. But now it's just like, it's like one of those things where everyone wins, if that makes any sense.
And you can get it instantaneously and not wait 6 to 10 days through the mail.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. Well, not only that, but I do not miss the days of piles of CDs on my desks.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. We still have ours at home.
Wow. No, because I used to get sent stuff that wasn't even labeled. The only way you could tell what it was by leaving it in the envelope. You know, I mean, yeah, I was like, oh, it's our band. You know, like I've gotten CDs that literally said the band name Kick Ass Shit below that. It's like, okay, do you have a song named Kick Ass Shit or what? What's the song called? You know.
Great name.
Yeah. Oh, you want to hear some band names? Oh my God.
Yeah, I do.
I had a band submit me stuff. The band was called Joe Jackson Whoopass Experience. and the song was called Get the Belt.
What? Get the Belt?
Yeah. Get the Belt. Get the Belt. Like,
oh, Get the Belt.
Yeah, yeah, because it was Joe Jackson was Michael Jackson's father, and he was. And if you remember, if you remember the story, he beat the kids. That he was an abusive father, and
that is awful.
Yeah, and I think Jermaine or Tito Jackson in an interview said that was something his father would say when they would skip a beat at band practice. When he would tell them to get the belt.
And I'm sure it wasn't them like sending you the record because they thought it'd be hilarious to get one over their father or something.
No, they're a ska band. It says it in their bio, their logo has Joe Jackson's face on it.
That's an amazing name. I hope they listen to this.
Yeah, and then there's another one. I don't know if you remember the television show Different Strokes with Gary Coleman.
He had a
saying where it says, "What you talking about, Willis?" Because Willis was his brother.
Oh yeah, I've heard that saying.
Yeah, that. Well, we had a band that was called "What You Sucking on, Willis." Submit music. It's like, wow.
That's a great name. What you sucking on, Willis?
So we get crap. I mean, we get weird stuff all the time, man. But that goes to what you and I were talking about. How diverse the genres are getting. I mean, so, and how easy they are to distribute. Now, you would think those two bands I mentioned were crap, but they're not. They're actually really good. One's a ska band, the Joe Jackson one, and one's a punk band, but the punk band sounds tight and all together.
Really? Do you know, I knew someone from a punk band. Oh God, I can't remember what it was called. But they got pretty big and they played with Bob Marley. Yeah, I know. And I used to sit down and go, tell me more stories. And they used to tell me about like smoking weed with Bob Marley. And I thought, that is amazing.
Oh, man. All the stories that were told that night.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I remember half of them. I'm joking.
Man, that is awesome, man. Well, I mean, where can we find you guys? Find you online?
Oh God, find me on Facebook. Instagram is like my favorite at the moment because of my hair. I just love taking pictures of it. Nice. Is that stupid?
No.
It is quite stupid, but. In Instagram, Facebook, definitely the best bet. Right now, obviously, I've got that really terrible YouTube video out, but only because I have I had no money when I was making that. So I thought, okay, so there's a dance floor, there's a camera, and some underwear. Okay, that was the end.
Nice. So, yeah. You're also on Twitter and SoundCloud too, right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, exactly. I'm literally on everything.
So, well, thank you, Lena, for doing the interview today. I really appreciate it. You've been a gem to talk to say the least.
Oh, thank you. So have you.